You know, I'm becoming more and more convinced all the time that there is way more going on here on a Sunday morning than you or I probably realize. A couple of times over the last month or so, I've had an interesting and slightly unnerving experience happen to me here in worship. We've sung a couple of songs that I'm very familiar with. But I'm not familiar with them because they're songs that we sing here very much. In fact, I don't think we've probably sung either of them, maybe for a few years even. I know them so well because they are songs that we used to sing regularly at a Sunday evening worship service we used to have here about 15 years ago. I learned those songs by singing them at that service. And I can still remember them so well that when we sing them, I don't have to look at the words, so I can close my eyes and really worship. That really works for me. I came to love those songs during those evening worship times. And I realized when we sang them here a couple of weeks ago that I had no idea how seriously God was taking me as I was singing those words to him. You remember that's what we're doing, right? We are singing these lyrics to God. We aren't just joining together in a sing-along here on Sunday morning, as fun as that would be. We're singing to God for God's pleasure. They really, really are sung prayers. So I want to encourage you to pay attention to these words we're singing, because I can assure you, God really is. He's listening. He's taking us seriously. And as I sang those familiar lyrics a couple of weeks ago, with the benefit of 15 years of hindsight, I realized that although I hadn't known it at the time, God was actually listening to my prayers in those lyrics. And in time, he moved to answer them. He's listening as we sing, friends. We really are singing to him. Well, sometimes a song strikes us right away, doesn't it? We know that it's special and that it's destined to hold a special place in our relationship with God. As I say that, you may be having a song or two pop into your mind. Songs that have really spoken to you or have touched your heart in some way. One of those songs for me is actually one that we don't sing here, but one that I first heard when Simon and I were first called to the mission to Mexico. It's by the artist Rich Mullins, and it's called Sometimes by Step. For a long time, I thought that song was special to me because it was quite literally the song God used to call Simon and I to Mexico. It was playing in the background of a video we watched about the work More Ministries do in Tijuana. A video God used to invite us to that work. But you know, as the years have passed, I've come to realize that that experience was not just about my call to Mexico. It was about my call to God. It was in some way about my call to pastoral ministry. And most importantly, it was about how God has and continues to try to shape me for each chapter of all of those calls. So I sing it now, and honestly, I quite literally laugh out loud at some of the lyrics because they're so fitting for the journey I've found myself on. Way back then, God was actually giving me a significant peek into what this journey was going to be like through that song. I'd like to tell you that I was quick enough to pick it up at the time, but I wasn't. I completely missed it. It's only in looking back that I can see now how it so perfectly describes so much of my walk with God. Most poignantly, these words, I will seek you in the morning, and I will learn to walk in your ways, and step by step you'll lead me, and I will follow you all of my days. Step by step. If there is one phrase that has come to describe how God is with me, it's that one. Step by step. Well, another lyric from that same song has actually been floating around in my mind as I've been working on this sermon. It goes like this. And on this road to righteousness, sometimes the climb can be so steep. Sometimes the climb can be so steep. Friends, Jesus has just spoken these words to us from our scripture reading this morning, challenging words about loving our enemies. And I don't know about you, but suddenly this climb of following him is starting to feel a little steep. But I say to you that listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not even withhold your shirt. These are steep words to us. They challenge us. And to be honest, we haven't always dealt with that challenge in helpful ways. I think it's helpful to unpack some of that first. At our worst, sometimes these words have been used to facilitate ongoing slavery and abuse, to discourage people from standing against those who are oppressing them. Just turn the other cheek. Pray for them. Sadly, there are times when scripture gets used in ways that God never, ever intended. More broadly, rather than engaging with this text and the challenge that it holds, whether we do that responsibly or irresponsibly, we just simply avoid it. Set it over there. Skip over it. We ignore this passage. How often has someone ever reminded you to love your enemy and pray for their well-being? To bless them with your life? I'm thinking probably it doesn't happen very often. I know the few times that I have found myself referring to this scripture, it hasn't usually been met with a very welcoming response. I usually get some pushback. People don't tend to appreciate being encouraged to pray for their enemies. So it's just easier to avoid it altogether. Put it over here. There's lots of others. Well, the third way we have dealt with this text is, I suspect, probably our most common misinterpretation. We remember that these are the words and the teachings of Jesus for all of his disciples, and so we are convicted that we can't ignore them. So instead, we subtly misconstrue what he's saying to us. And in doing that, lo and behold, his words suddenly become a little more palatable. A little less dauntingly steep. Here's how we've done this. I'm pretty sure most of us will have encountered it. The section of this text I just reread for you ends with those very familiar words, "Do to others as you would have them do to you." This is the golden rule, right? Well known, even by people who may not know very much about Jesus. People who may not even realize it was Jesus who said those words. If you want to engage in a little fun social research experiment this week, you might want to try doing an informal survey of your friends. Ask them if they've ever heard of the golden rule, and then ask them if they know who actually said it. I'd love to hear what you find out. Most of us have probably remembered or been reminded of this golden rule periodically throughout our lives. But do you think about it in the context of this passage? Do you think about the fact that when Jesus said it on this occasion, he was not just calling us to be considerate and loving to others in general. He does that other places, but that's not what's happening here. I'm not convinced that we always remember that when he said it this time, he was clearly talking about how we treat our enemies. Jesus wasn't just calling us to be kind in general to those people we find it pretty easy to be kind to. Now this time the golden rule is actually the capstone of all this whole section where he's calling us to love our enemies. He's calling us to be kind and considerate, loving and even generous to those who hate us, to the people we may even hate in return. That's the context of Jesus' golden rule as it's given to us in this reading. And if you doubt me, just read the last few verses where Jesus basically says, anybody can love those you like or care about. That's nothing special. It's loving your enemies. That's the way we're called to. That's what makes a difference. Now we need to be clear by what Jesus means when he calls us to love our enemies. He's not simply calling us not to hate them or not to retaliate when they hurt us, although he does ask us not to retaliate, among other things. But he's calling us to move beyond not hating to actively loving. And he gives us some very, very specific ways to do that by blessing them, by praying for their well-being, by giving freely and generously to them. Jesus calls us to actively seek the good of those who have offended or hurt us, those who may have damaged our lives or the lives of people we love in deeply, deeply painful ways. We're talking about enemies here, friends. Real enemies, not just people we find irritating or we'd rather just not hang out with. Real enemies. And let's not kid ourselves. Whether we like to think about it or not, we've all got them. We probably are them. You know, when our children were small, occasionally they would march up in front of me and pronounce, "Mummy, I hate fill in the blank." And I always responded by saying, "Hate's a pretty big word, sweetie. Do you really hate them? Or do you maybe just not like them very much? Or are you maybe just mad at them?" Most of the time they would heave a great big sigh and concede that they really just didn't like Bobby very much today. He'd been mean. I always felt like they were a little bit disappointed, like I'd somehow stolen their thunder. But you know, even as little ones, they had some sense of the intensity of this emotion of hatred. It's a big word. It's a big emotion. And it often arises out of a complex range of experiences. Well, Jesus seems to be suggesting that for us to follow in his way, we must look at the people we hate in all of that intensity and complexity, and not only not respond in hatred, but even more, choose to actively seek their well-being. Friends, on this road to righteousness, sometimes the climb can be so steep. Maybe too steep. Well, we're now at the part of the sermon where I'm supposed to suddenly reveal the secret. One teacher of mine referred to this part, Phil's doing this, like, Diane, bring it. A teacher of mine referred to this part as disclosing the clue. It's the point where we reveal the key to the mystery, the problem we've been wrestling with in the reading. Well, in the best circumstances, the key almost magically unlocks that problem. It sorts it all out and makes sense of it. And we go, yeah. It shows us how we can actually live into these calls Jesus makes of us. Well, I'm afraid today I don't have a magic key. There's not one clear thing that I know of that we can really apply on this one. It's a steep, steep call. But there are two things I want to offer you. They won't help us avoid the steep climb. They won't suddenly make it flat or even just a little incline. It's still there. It's still steep. But they might help to prepare us to make it. The first one is simply this. I think there might be two ways Jesus wants us to hear this call to love our enemies and to actively seek their well-being. The first one is what we've been talking about, to hear it as a call for us to try to live out. I'll come back to that one in a minute. The second way to hear it, I think maybe, is as a vision. Is it possible that he is painting a vision for us of what life in God's kingdom is like? It's a place where we're not trapped in pain and hatred, where instead of hating and retaliating against our enemies, we are able to choose the way of love and to actively live it out. It's a place where the power of love disarms hatred, where love brings life to the places of our deepest pain, where love redeems, heals, and restores. It's a place where we believe this so deeply that love becomes our only choice with our enemies. There is no alternative. What if Jesus is giving us a peek of what we have to look forward to? Of how God is going to set so much that is wrong in this world right? Don't you think it's a captivating vision? It's powerful. So perhaps, in part, these words are a vision for us to hold on to. And that is good, and God will bring it. But as I just said, they are also a call that most of us probably instinctively realize that we can't easily live out. We can't summon the love and the grace it takes to live this way, to actively choose to seek the well-being of people we'd rather just didn't even exist. We know we can't answer Jesus' call in this. It's too steep. It's too hard. It asks too much of us. Knowing that and admitting it, that's actually a step in the right direction, I think. Here's a little thing I've discovered as I've been trying to follow Jesus step by step. If I'm struggling to have the grace I need to have for someone, it usually doesn't work for me just to try harder. That'll last for about 5 minutes, and then they tick me off again. If we are short on love and grace, it's not rocket science. As with most things, it usually means we need to return to the source of those things in our life. We need to find some more somewhere. So who is the one who has poured grace and love into your life? How has God shown you personally his love and grace? Even though some days you know you really didn't deserve it. Most days. How has God actively sought your well-being? How has God blessed you generously, maybe even extravagantly? If you find yourself struggling to summon the grace and love you need for someone, try thinking about God's unconditional, freely offered, unending grace and love for you. Sit with him. Sit in prayer. Sit in worship. Take time to just absorb some of God's love. If there is a key to living out this challenging call to love our enemies, then this might be it. For us to find the grace and the love we need to love those who are so hard to love, we need to be in close touch with God, the one who is the source of grace and love in our lives. Friends, on this road to righteousness, sometimes the climb can be so steep. You know, there's a line that follows that one in that great Rich Mullins song. It goes like this. I may stumble in my steps, but never beyond your reach. If you are stumbling in this one, I have good news for you. God is reaching out to you. Please, take his hand. You'll find in it an endless supply of the love and grace we all need. And that's the only way we're going to be able to make this climb, because it's steep. Step by step, together, and with him.